I've got diphtheria crushing my esophagus. I've got Ebola virus dripping from my nose. I've got the leprosy of the heart valve, exacerbating my incredible woes. I want to take my brain out and blast it with the wave, an ultrasonic echographic and a pulsating shave. I want a magic pill for my ailments, the health equivalent to Citizen Kane. And if I don't get it now in the tablet, I think I'm doomed and I'll have to go insane. I want a requiem for my disease, so I'm paging Dr. Steve.
Dr. Steve!
It's weird medicine, or in Urdu, Mushkil Tib. I'm Dr. Steve with my little pal, P.A. John. Hello, John.
Hello, Steve. What is Urdu?
Urdu is what the language spoken in Pakistan.
So there you go.
I have some Pakistani residents, and I asked them how you say weird medicine. And I may be, who knows what I'm saying.
Urdu?
Yeah, Urdu.
Yeah, I think you just said something.
It's a very cool
language.
It's very close to Hindi, and, you know, they're very similar. If you speak Urdu or you speak Hindi, you can pretty much understand each other.
Huh. Well, it's obvious we didn't hear that before the in the prep.
Of course not.
Interesting.
Keep you guys on your toes. We also have double vasectomy Todd on third mic. What God has put together, let no urologist put asunder.
Hey, how you doing, Dr. Steve?
All right. And we have our studio audience with us today. Hello, Rob.
Hello, Dr. Steve.
Welcome to the first and still only uncensored medical program in the history of radio. If you're new to this show, we try to deal with medical problems honestly, with plain language, and with no limitations regarding content. If you have a medical question and you might be embarrassed to take it to your regular medical provider, give us a shout at drsteve202@gmail.com or visit the Weird Medicine Forum at ronfez.net or call our voicemail line at 423-343-8884. That's
423-DIE-TOOTIE.
We're also on Twitter at Weird Medicine. Please remember, we're not your healthcare providers. Check out anything you hear from us with your regular doctor, PA, nurse, practitioner, acupuncturist, or whatever. Tonight, we will introduce our new running bit with double vasectomy Todd taking the part of the biggest loser. And we'll explain that in a little bit. But first, and he also may be the biggest gainer.
Biggest gainer.
So we'll explain. But first, let's update you on Big A's medical woes. I think we talked about last time that we arranged for Big A to get a sleep study done, and he actually had to have two of them done. And it was all supposed to be, we got it prior authorized, and it was all supposed to be covered by his insurance. And then a couple weeks later, he got a bill for $15,000. And, you know, we've raised $2,500 maybe for him and Big Pat. I was almost said for Pat from Unaki. So, you know, thinking that maybe we'll pay for a little medicine, maybe an x-ray here and there, some lab work, but this bill for $15,000 comes through. John Gray from caseofthemondays.net. Buy their CD, by the way. John's a great guy. Went to work on it and said, look, we prior approved this. It was supposed to all be covered 100%. What's going on? So Big A did get an adjusted bill the other day. And he opened up the mail, and it was for $5,000.
A little bit better.
Yeah, it's a little bit better, but we're still in big trouble. So we're working on that. John Gray still thinks that he can get that stuff covered. Plus, we think that we can get his BiPAP mask for free.
Oh, that's
so cool. That would be nice. So we don't have to use any of the money
that
we
raised
for that. Pat just went back to his doctor and had a visit, which we're going to cover, and they're going to do some blood work. He got out of his cab and heard a big cracking sound, and so we're a little concerned that he might have had a fracture in his foot.
Oh, shit.
So he may have to go get an x-ray, but that's where we are right now with those two guys.
Hmm.
So $15,000 down to $5,000 still eats up all of our fund plus some, so hopefully we can get that down and just get back to some regular sort of routine medical care, which is what this fund was for in the first place. Right.
Is it still possible to donate?
Yeah, absolutely it is. You can go to our website at drsteve.com or pajohn.com and click on the link that says Help Pat and Big A, and you can donate. It just is a PayPal thing, and you can give anywhere from a dollar to however much you want. We've had donations from $1 up to $1,000.
So very nice.
All right. Okay, so that's Big A. We were trying to do a phoner with the Brooklyn Blowhard, who's also in the hospital, and we wish him well. He's got a diabetic foot ulcer and is in the hospital getting some antibiotics. Doesn't look like it's as bad as they initially thought. And some bonehead doctor raised the A word to him, the amputation word.
Oh.
And, you know, way prematurely, in my opinion. I mean, I wasn't there. But that's just it. If you know Gary at all, the Brooklyn Blowhard, he kind of gets things in his head and can't get them out. And we were going to do a phoner with him tonight to see how he's doing. Of course, his line was busy.
Yeah.
So no surprise there. So, Gary, we tried to call you, man. We wanted to do a phoner with you. So, but we wish him well, and hopefully he will be back home soon.
Yeah, and just to let you know, typically, depending on where they're amputating, do you know toe, foot, possibly?
What are you trying to say?
Well, I think a lot of times, I have seen patients working in orthopedics with problems, diabetic foot ulcers, toe ulcers, problems. Amputating the toe, they do absolutely fantastic. A lot of times I've seen people try to keep appendages, the feet, the toes,
yeah.
And they just continuously be a problem.
Yeah.
And then you've seen people have amputations, they get on a prosthetic, and then boom, they're up and going and doing actually pretty well. So a lot of times it's the, I don't want my toe cut off, I don't want my foot cut off, but with today's technology, as far as prosthetics goes, it's...
Yeah. Well,
it can be.
Hopefully, it won't get to that.
Right,
but
right.
I guess what you're saying is, if it did
get that way, it's not the end of the world.
Right, right. I think some antibiotics will do the trick for him.
Wound care.
Absolutely. And we have permission to talk about all these people, so please don't write us about HIPAA and all that kind of stuff. So we're not violating their HIPAA rights because, you know, we have permission to talk about these things.
Right.
But anyway, so that's where we're at with those guys. We've got a bunch of interesting questions tonight. We've got some really odd voicemails that we're going to play. If you have a question, email us at drsteve202@gmail.com or call our voicemail line at 343-8884, area code 423. Or go to the ronfez.net Weird Medicine Forum, and you can drop one there. I am behind on those, but I think I've got it down to like 7 questions now, so I'll get those done over vacation. All right. You ready for the first question, John?
Sure am.
Let's go.
All right. Dear Dr. Steve, my girlfriend wants me to choke her during sex. She swears it makes that special moment more intense. Although I'm pretty open-minded, this scares me. First, what's this all about? And second, can I do damage? If she dies, can I be charged with murder?
Wow.
Or if she dies, will you finish before you call the police?
Yeah.
That's where it comes in.
I had actually talked to Jefferson the Shyster about this, who couldn't be here tonight. He was in mediation. And absolutely, if she dies, you can be charged with murder. There's no question about that. It would be unintentional or accidental homicide or something. I wish he was here to explain that. But it would be considered an accident, but you'd still be responsible for it.
Right.
So, erotic I had trouble with that word a couple shows back. Erotic asphyxiation refers to intentionally cutting off oxygen to the brain for sexual arousal. It's also called asphyxiophilia, erotic asphyxia, scarfing, and then here's one that I had never heard before, but Cotswaraism. And I don't know where that comes from. Do you have any idea?
No idea.
Okay. Or breath control play.
Looked at me like I would know.
Well, you're the you're
this
Mr.
Is my thing.
You're Mr. Piercing and Kinky Weirdness, so I thought you might know.
Well, you know, as a matter of fact, I saw this on the agenda.
Yeah.
And so I talked to my phone sex provider about it.
Yeah.
And she had a lot of things to say. It's very, very common.
Yeah.
And she actually sees a lot of folks, or not sees, but she actually talks to a lot of folks in a week. And sometimes she gets concerned because she'll have them pass out on her.
Yeah, yeah.
Did you say your phone sex provider?
Yeah, my phone sex provider.
Oh.
I spoke to her just the other
day. Is it just one person that you call? The same
number
over and over?
Yeah, I pretty much have a steady. Once you find something that works, you don't go fooling around.
You know, and I was just totally buying into this. It's like, wow, okay, you did some research for the show. That's great.
I think you think I'm kidding, don't you?
No, are you?
I know you're
being
not
serious.
Kidding.
I'm looking for the joke.
No, I'm being serious. I called. I was talking to her anyway. I had seen this on the on the agenda, so I asked her about it, and she said that there have been times she's had a client pass out on her because they were into that sort of thing.
Yeah.
And she was not sure what to do for them.
How much does she charge?
Well, what she charges me and what she charges you might be two different things.
Is this like a 900 number?
I will get with you after the show. I will get with you after the show.
Well, does she want a plug? I mean, we could plug her.
I'll ask her. I don't know if she wants a
no
plug.
No pun intended.
I don't know if you can.
I don't know if we can do that.
Over the phone.
You know what I'll do? I'll see if she wants to do a call-in sometime. If we have a weird sex question, we'll see if we can get her on the phone to answer.
Okay.
She might charge you the minute rate, but...
Well, I don't even know if she could answer it, but she could... make the
color commentary for
very
sure.
Interesting. Yes.
Yeah.
Well, look, when you jerk off, do you not hold your breath at all? You know, do you not
never
do that? Any, none of you guys do that?
Never thought about
it. You don't hold your breath?
I don't give it much thought, really.
Okay. Okay, it really must be just me then.
Well, give me a second. Hold on.
Ew!
All right. Well, listen, the practice of erotic asphyxiation runs the gamut from simply holding your breath during sex or masturbation to elaborate mechanisms designed to cause near fainting at the moment of orgasm, and then they're rigged to release the neck afterward. Now, I was at one point medical examiner for one section of a northeastern state when I lived up there, and I never saw any cases like this, but I used to get the Medical Examiner's magazine. And there's this organization called the National Association of Medical Examiners. And the journal, I think, was NAME, N-A-M-E. And these guys delight in just recounting odd ways of dying. I mean, there's all the normal ways, and then there's all the crazy ways that they put in this medical journal. And one of them, they did a whole issue on erotic asphyxiation. And a lot of people will... die from this when they have some weird sort of noose hooked up, and then they'll hold on to it, say, and then when they faint, they'll let go of the rope, and then it releases the pressure on their neck.
They hope.
That's the problem. Ooh. And once you faint, you don't. And if it doesn't let go, then that's it. And you know what'll happen is it'll get caught on something, or some of these people have a mechanism, an actual mechanism that's supposed to release after they let go of a dead man switch, and it doesn't work, or they don't let go of it, or they clench up, or it gets caught in something.
Yeah, and so they seize, I guess.
Yeah, it's a possibility. So it can be dangerous. There's no question about it. People who enjoy this activity in the vernacular are called gaspers. So. This is classified as a paraphilia, in other words, a sexual fetish in the psychiatrist's book of diagnostic and statistical manual of the American Psychiatric Association. There are the estimates in the United States, 250 to 1,000 deaths in the U.S. per year. And choking with both hands is a really bad idea. If you just put your hand up to your neck right now, in the front, you can feel the thyroid cartilage.
Yep.
Okay, that's that sort of hard thing that causes the Adam's apple in males. And to the side of it, you can feel two muscles that go from the collarbone up to the jaw.
Right.
Okay? Now, right around in that area, if you sort of push back at the upper, say, quarter of the neck, you can feel two little protruding bones in there.
Got them.
You've got them?
Yep.
Okay, those are the hyoid bones. Okay. That is it's a bone that's designed to hold the trachea open and some other things, but there's some muscles hooked up to it and stuff. That is it's one of the thinnest bones in the body, and it's easily broken. And you don't want to break that because there's no way to fix it. So one of the things that they look for in murder cases, if someone has been strangulated, is their hyoid bone broken?
Oh, okay.
So just be really careful. You know, the deaths are felt to happen most often when their patients are alone because their rescue mechanism fails and then they can't stop the asphyxiation. It is really an embarrassing way to go.
Oh,
no question about it.
But since
it is an accidental death, life insurance will usually pay, where it won't for suicide. So if there's any silver lining in this cloud, that would be it.
Well, but are most medical examiners going to look and say, oh, wait a minute, you know, he's got lotion on his hand. He wasn't trying to commit suicide.
Yeah, they absolutely will.
They will?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, well, that's
good.
Yeah. I'll bet that gets misdiagnosed once in a while.
I bet every once in a while it does.
Mm-hmm.
If you engage in consensual edge play, you need to know the risks and what you're doing. And if this person really wants to try this out, seek out a bondage and discipline group in your area. I mean, believe me, they're there.
Oh,
just
yeah.
about any town big enough.
Yep.
And get someone to teach you how to do it safely. Even then, there's some risk. You know, you tend to lose control during parts of the sex act, and bad random things can happen. I can't recommend this activity due to the number of deaths that occur per year. Of course, you know, I'm not a prude, and I know this stuff goes on. And, you know, she might try to hold her breath rather than you choking her.
Mm-hmm.
Or you can try to figure out a way that you can do it safely. But even then, it holds
her breath. Hold her breath and simulate it.
Yeah.
You know, just don't start applying a bunch of pressure.
Yeah. Because seriously, I mean, look, we got a country of 300 and some million people, and 250 to 1,000 people die every year. But for those people, it's tragic.
Sure.
So, and, you know, they were just trying to have some fun. So, you know, it always bothers me.
And you don't want to leave that story with your loved ones either.
No,
You know, oh, my God, what happened?
Yeah, he was masturbating.
Yeah.
And it just doesn't start off well. Mm-mm. So, all right. Well, as usual, we have a Shannon from South Florida question. I do think this one might spell the end of the bit, so I'll go ahead and
cue
that up.
Hey, Dr. Steve, it's Shannon from South Florida. Recently took a friend into the hospital, ended up, they had pneumonia, like really bad pneumonia. And I'd go and visit them every day, hold their hand, kiss their forehead when I left, give them big hugs. And then it turned out that, they also had MRSA in their bloodstream. They did end up dying. And though they did have the sign saying, infectious disease and everything, and always in a secluded room, it never made me gown up or anything. And I'm just wondering, what are the chances of me getting it from contact like that? That's my question, and thanks a lot. Talking to you guys later.
Okay. Well, I'm sorry to hear about her friend. That's a kind of a downer question compared to her usual.
Yeah, you know, I was ready for something great.
I got my tampon caught in my vagina or something. But, you know, this is a serious question, and it actually is a very good question. We talked a little bit about MRSA before. MRSA is methicillin-resistant Staph aureus, and it's simply an antibiotic-resistant form of a common bacterium called Staph aureus. And that's found growing harmlessly in the skin or in the nose. And about 1 in 100 estimated healthy people can carry the antibiotic-resistant MRSA. And those people are called colonized. Okay, it's not invading. It just lives in their body, mm-hmm. on their skin, up in their nose. They may never even know they're colonized with MRSA and may not have any effects whatsoever from it. But if the bacteria gets into the body through, like, a surgical wound, then it can cause infection. So there's mm-hmm. a difference between being colonized with something and being infected.
Right.
You know, infection implies invasion. You know, people wonder, why is it always happening in hospitals and nursing homes? A lot of it is that the people there are already ill and have most likely lowered immunity. And they have to have intravenous lines or invasive procedures. And, you know, and also antibiotics that we used for years and overused them, mm-hmm. people with viruses getting antibiotics for their virus and using the wrong antibiotics or not using enough. Sometimes if you don't kill all the bacteria, the few that you leave behind will be more resistant to the antibiotic.
So you just kind of gave them a flu shot.
That's right. Yeah, exactly. Wow. You gave them just enough to cull out the ones that aren't sensitive to the antibiotic, and the ones that are left are moderately resistant. So that's why your doctor will always tell you, please finish this antibiotic.
Mm-hmm.
You know, don't just take it until you feel better and then stick it up in the
cabinet
for next time. So that's one of the problems. People who are at risk for serious infection include someone who's got an open wound, like injuries, burns, or surgery and stuff like that. Someone with an impaired immune system, people who are unwell with other infections, the elderly, and anybody that's got a tube like a urinary catheter or anything like that that can, the body's very good at flushing out bacteria, but when you've got a foreign body in there like a catheter in your bladder and you just leave it in, then it gives a place for the bacteria to collect and grow. Mm. People with MRSA who are in the hospital can have visitors. And it usually doesn't harm healthy people. And that includes even pregnant women, children, and babies and stuff. What you want to do is wash your hands before you go in so you don't bring them anything, and wash your hands when you leave right. So you don't take anything with you. Mm-hmm. And the reason that they don't tell the family members that they have to gown up is because they're not going from room to room with the ability to spread it to other patients in the hospital.
Uh-huh. Right.
So you may get Shannon may be colonized because she had some really close contact with this person. Now, his MRSA infection was in the blood, but I suspect that he had it other places too.
Mm-hmm.
So it's she may be colonized. That's something they would test if she ever goes into the hospital. They'll test her for it, mm-hmm. and they'll treat it. And it's very just because it's methicillin resistant. Doesn't mean that it's resistant to everything. MRSA still is treatable, especially in healthy young adults who get it on their skin, like athletes and people that go to the gym and pick up MRSA there. They'll get these little boils on the skin, and they use a real old-timey antibiotic called Bactrim that still works great for that.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just because it's an antibiotic that people don't use that much anymore. Mm-hmm. And so the bacteria hasn't learned how to be... resistant to it yet.
Mm-hmm.
So what we do is if we discover that a patient has MRSA, we'll usually isolate them and give them antibiotics that will kill MRSA. Now, if you're colonized and you know it, then they'll give you an ointment to shove up your nose with Q-tips called Bactroban, plus stuff to clean your skin with.
Mm-hmm.
And that's basically it. So if you're young and healthy, yes, she may have become colonized, but it's unlikely it's going to do anything to her.
So you don't necessarily discourage people from kissing grandma on the forehead, or do you?
No, I don't.
Okay.
I don't. You could clean her forehead before you do.
Yeah, that's not a bad idea.
Yeah.
That's pretty much good practice all the time, though.
Cleaning grandma's forehead?
Yeah, before you kiss her.
Yeah, it's got Jell-O on it. All right. Here, we've got another question here from our voicemail line at 423-343-8884. That's 343-DIE-TUTIE.
Hi, Dr. Steve. This is Leanne, and I was wondering if a woman who has her nipples pierced can still breastfeed. I look forward to hearing the answer. Thanks.
Did you hear a baby in the background
on
that?
Yeah, nope. I did.
No?
I did.
Did you?
Yeah, let me play it again. Let me play it again.
Hi, Dr. Steve. This is Leanne, and I was wondering if a woman who has...
No, that's a baby.
I heard it. Something squealing.
I look forward to hearing the answer. Thanks.
Or a the baby pot-bellied really pig.
The baby really needs to hear your answer.
Yeah.
He's cranky.
The nipple piercing is... more and more common these days. And Todd, are you learning how to do piercings in your
No, it's not part school? Of the barber curriculum, but once you become a master barber, it's really easy. You can just do a quick apprenticeship, and I plan to do that.
Okay.
And so I'll be doing piercings in about a year.
Okay. Yeah, that's what I want, is someone who had a quick apprenticeship to do my piercing.
Well, a quick apprenticeship and 1,600 hours of other instruction.
Yeah, there you go. When you are breastfeeding, if you've ever seen anybody use a pump, the milk comes out, from more than one place. It's not just a single hole in the nipple where it comes out. And P.A. Jill is breastfeeding, so you know that, John.
Correct, I do.
It kind of oozes out of multiple places. And so putting in the nipple ring may disrupt a couple of those places, but in general it won't disrupt the ability to breastfeed. Now, and I know Todd disagrees with me on this, I think that if you're going to breastfeed and you know it, you should remove the nipple ring. And this is why. Although it's possible for the kid to get the nipple into his or her mouth and get milk out, they don't have any teeth. The ring or the barbell or whatever could abrade them. And the worst thing is if it came loose, because there's a lot of pressure being put on the nipple.
Tons of pressure.
Well, you know, I didn't. I was sort of kidding with you when I disagreed with you, yep. And you know why. But, yeah, I mean, I've got some piercings, and I know how easy it is to get those captive balls and the other things loose and yep. out of there. And, oh, that would be just horrible.
Yeah, you don't want the kid either choking or swallowing a nipple ring.
No.
And how embarrassing is that? You go to the emergency room. So, you know, save yourself the embarrassment. The other thing is if there's any infection on it at all, the kid really shouldn't be breastfeeding from that area. So if you know you're going to breastfeed and you're cool with it, just take the ring out a couple weeks before you deliver and let it heal up, and then you can breastfeed.
Part of,
and then just put it back in.
I thought part of getting, unless it closes over, but part of getting in a piercing was the enjoyment of getting the piercing. I mean,
well,
isn't that part of the excitement about it?
It is. Getting it and having it are both cool for different
right.
reasons.
Yeah.
Yeah. So,
you know.
So take it out.
Will it close up if you take it out?
Sometimes.
Yeah, like eventually.
Does, yeah.
You know, so it depends on how long you've had it, how well it's healed, and, you know, everyone's own body.
Yeah, and how big you've gauged it and
right,
all that
exactly.
stuff.
Right, exactly. If you've gone up 4 or 5 gauges and you get this big
hole there.
Yeah, then that's going to be a little different.
Yeah. I'm curious about that, if you had a big gauge nipple ring.
How made me question it, too. Yeah. When you said that, I thought, well, you know, there's a lot of levels of damage that you can do.
Yeah, but it would still work, I would think.
That's one I can't
answer. There's a lot
of ducks. I don't think you're thinking about the kind of gauging that I'm thinking about, because I've seen people.
Now, I've seen TV shows on National Geographic where they have these big hoops and stuff in the ears and nut sacks and stuff.
Well,
you're talking like that?
Well, imagine something like that on your nipple. You
first off, if anybody's doing that personally, that's disgusting.
Well, all right.
Whatever, John.
All right. I'm sure
big, huge gauges
like that?
They're
out there right now writing you off their lists so that they won't bother
you. But big gauges?
Well, I'm just saying, I've seen it. I've seen women with
it's body modification.
Big old gauges hanging on their nipples.
Like the size of what? Pencils?
Bigger. The size of my index finger. Like if I were to do that.
Yeah.
if I were to shoot you the bird.
Double vasectomy cut is flipping on the bird.
I've seen nipple gauges.
I would like, we may need to do a follow-up on this. I want to find out if the big gauges cause problems with breastfeeding, because everything that I read about was talking basically about the regular small nipple ring.
Right.
I was talking about like the things on like the ears that hang down to the shoulders gauge.
The plates, those things.
Yeah.
I've never seen that on a nipple, so I don't know.
Yeah, I was going to say, that would be disgusting.
That'd be interesting.
That would be weird.
Yeah.
A weird medicine.
You say disgusting, Todd says interesting, so... All right. We've got – how much time we got left? We've got 21 minutes. Okay, because we need to get to our new bit. Why don't we do it now, and
okay.
then we'll just do whatever. Basically, Todd, you quit your job, and I don't know how much detail you want to go into, but you had some traumatic stuff happen in your life, and then you ended up basically – having your kids full time, by yourself.
Know.
You're a single parent,
right? well, I don't want to bum everybody.
Yeah,
out.
We don't have to.
I had, let's just suffice it to say, I had a crappy year.
Yeah.
And as a part of that year, I quit my job. I'm a single dad now, and just different. You know, the stresses of life are different than they used to be. So I stopped my workout regimen and I started eating like crap. And so I've gained up pretty close to 80 pounds. I'm around 250, 255 at this point, and I really need to be, 185.
Sure.
Somewhere along. And that's where I'm healthy. It's where I feel good. It's where I look good.
You carry it well. I was surprised when you told me you weighed that much.
Well, thank you.
Well, you're welcome. But
you're solid. You are a solid.
I've always been. I'm a pretty big guy. Our listeners don't know. I'm 6'1", and, you know, I worked out before, so I've got some muscle mass, but I've just got flab hanging off of it at this point.
Yeah.
It's unattractive and
so,
but solid.
And I don't sleep well. You know, that sort of thing's starting to happen.
Yeah. Well, we were looking for a new sort of running bit, not a gag so much, but just something that we can talk about to have sort of a story arc. And this thing about your weight came up. And one of the things that we thought we would do is hook you up with an expert and see if we could get the 80 pounds off and how fast it would take.
Right. Now, do you want to talk about why I got so motivated, or do you want to wait and talk
about
that in a minute?
Yeah, go ahead. Yes, yes, absolutely, because that's the...
John, I want to hear you. You go ahead. And
that's the weird medicine part, but we've talked about that on the show before, but
go ahead.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, I didn't know.
Yeah, that was a question early on. Yeah.
All right. Well, couldn't get much earlier than me. I was the first caller.
Yeah.
But somehow... You know, apparently, guys, if you're overweight, every 35 pounds or so, you're going to lose a half inch of cock.
Yeah. It's actually, the research that we read was an inch.
No kidding.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, see, now I'm doubly motivated, literally.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because, you know, nobody has 2 inches of cock to spare.
Right.
I don't care who you are.
Yeah.
Right? And I had noticed that something was different.
Yep.
And I didn't know exactly what, but I was like, something is going on with me sexually.
Yep.
Because things just weren't bottoming like they used to.
Yeah, yeah.
And so...
Well, you've got padding there that's worked its way out from the pubic bone. And now it's robbing you of at least an inch or two of your length. If you go by the study you saw, then an inch, and which is still an inch. An inch is an inch. And the study that we read, it was 35 pounds per inch.
Wow.
So if you... And that's why we said, you know, if I weighed 700 pounds... And, you know, lost down to 120.
You know, that's wild.
Exactly.
Because so your fat basically just starts eating your length.
Right. Yeah. Well, it just starts, it grows around where your length would be apparent.
Right.
If that makes sense.
Yeah, it does.
So that's a really motivating thing for guys. You see, women, I don't think, get this to how important, even on just sort of a subtle psychological level, this is. I quit smoking 15 years ago, not because I was worried about heart disease and not because I was worried about cancer, even though my mom died of stomach cancer, but rather because I read a statistic that said the number one cause of impotence in men over 40 is tobacco abuse.
Wow.
So guess what?
Now, that would have done it for me.
That
if
motivated
I used
me to quit tobacco. And so when Todd found out he could gain a couple inches back by losing 70 pounds.
Right on.
70 pounds, then he got really motivated to do this. So what I've done is I have made some arrangements for you to work with a remote advisor.
Okay.
And her name is MJ Kowaleski, and she is... Steve Carlisi's girlfriend, or fiance, I guess. And I don't know if you can see this, but I'm just bringing up her website. And anyone who's listening, if you want to look at this, it's www.musclesorority.com. And this is who's going to be teaching you. Now,
whoa.
Dang.
You can look at this and see she knows what the hell she's talking about.
You got that right.
And I want to show you the video. I think that it's just, yeah, holy moly. So, anyway, good. Everyone is going to be well. Anyway,
I think I'm going to go back to the first segment.
Now I'm tongue-tied.
What was that website again? I think I might do some erotic asphyxiation. I'm looking at that.
www.musclesorority.com. Now, what she does is a program that she'll walk you through, and she will, as long as you're 100% motivated, which I know you are.
Oh, yeah.
It comes in phases, and she starts with phase one, phase two, phase three. It's both diet and exercise kinds of things that she's going to walk you through. And we've already paid this fee, her fee, up front. And it's she's very reasonable, too.
Oh, cool.
And we will hook you up with her, and then every show we'll kind of do an update and see how that's going.
All right.
And I'm really interested in this. She does the blood type diet. So she'll ask you what your blood type is, and then she's going to modify it based on that. Now, I am somewhat skeptical about changing the diet based on your blood type. However, most of these diets that I've seen make sense as a diet. I mean, if you're cutting out pork because you're B positive,
right.
It's fine because you're eating chicken and beef, so you just don't eat pork. I mean, lots of people don't eat pork. I don't know what she's going to do, but
right.
But
she's not going to say, oh, well, your blood type is O negative, so you're eating Hershey's Kisses and peanut butter.
right. It won't be crazy.
Exactly.
That would be cool.
It'd be nice.
There is somewhere on here where she's got videos. I just wanted you to see this video, but I don't know if I can bring it up. Here's some of her training photos.
She's very fit and cut.
I'm telling you.
Looking at this, she definitely has muscle definition.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, that is very attractive. She's a very attractive lady.
Yeah, she's awesome. She's very nice, too.
Missing those 2 inches right now.
No, I don't.
Dude, you don't get to go out with her.
No, I know. And I'm respectful.
Oh, shit. Sorry. Well, I was trying to bring the video up, and now I don't know what I did.
Show just screeched to a halt. Everything just...
That hurt.
There she is. Ooh. All right. Wow. Sorry. Well, okay. It's probably screwing up the audio recording and everything, but her videos are also very interesting. And she's just in great shape, and she seems really smart. So that's what we're going to do. So we'll hook you up with that. Let's weigh you.
All right.
All right. And so we'll get a benchmark of your weight.
Okay.
Now so Todd's actually coming over and getting on the weight machine.
Right. The weight machine, otherwise called a scale.
I was going to say, I was thinking the weighing machine.
Genius.
Well.
Yep, so he's going to do the weigh-in.
And what do we got?
200 and what?
Oh, we have got 250 and one half pounds.
Okay, 250 and one half.
Right.
All right, so.
250 and a half?
We will.
You asked.
We'll track your track your project. Your progress as time goes on.
And you're going to lose 70.
I'm going to lose. My goal weight is going to be 185. What is that? What is that?
Well, your goal weight's going to be whatever MJ tells you your goal weight.
Okay.
Yeah.
Cool.
You know,
all right.
That's right.
Right.
All right. How about that?
Yeah. Hey, dude. I am right with her program.
250
whatever.
Down to 170. I would be too. That would be 75 pounds. So, and that should gain you 2 inches. The other thing you have to do is measure yourself.
Okay.
And you can't cheat and measure from your taint. You got to measure from where the schlong comes.
Well, what I figured I would do is I'll measure it like a horse. Right now, I'm 1.5 hands.
Okay.
Does that work?
Yeah, sure. Sure. As long as it's consistent. Now your hands may shrink.
Well, that's right.
As you lose weight. I would just use a measuring
thing. I will. I know.
And what we'll do is we'll put it in an Excel spreadsheet, and we'll do a graph, and we'll post it on our website.
If I was you, I would measure yourself in a sauna or a hot shower.
All right.
Now, remember, everybody, this is not just a weight loss bit, because that would be stupid.
Sure.
I mean, who hasn't done that? Oh, I'm going to lose weight. But we're going to verify whether the penis length thing is for real or not. And if it is, I think we will motivate a whole bunch of people to lose that weight.
That's what I'm hoping. I think if any guy's going to get motivated to drop that gut, that'll do it.
Yep. So this is the new bit, dick length.
Versus weight.
Right.
And actually, let me ask you this too.
We'll graph one against the other too. That would be awesome.
Oh, cool.
So the
measurement's flaccid? Or the measurements,
erect.
What do you want?
Because
there's a big difference. I mean, I'm lucky. I'm one of those guys that just
you're a grower.
Yeah, I mean, you know, there's just a big percentage difference between flaccid and some guys are, you know.
And I was going to say sometimes
it doesn't change.
You get out of a cold shower and you just
it's the shrinkage.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. I would say measure both.
Okay, I'll measure both.
All right, we'll do it.
I guess we're going to have to just trust this.
Yeah, well,
I'm not verifying.
Yeah, you pretty much are, John, because I don't think you're coming in to check.
Right. What was Reagan's thing, trust but verify? I'm just going to trust.
You're just going to trust. You trust, I'll verify.
Okay, we'll believe you on that.
All right.
We got a really weird voicemail thing on our Skype line, which, by the way, I'll repeat again, 423-343-8884 if you have any questions. Or our Gmail is drsteve202@gmail.com. But we got this, and I don't even – if anyone out there understands this, it sounds like Espanol, but it's so distorted, it's really hard to tell.
Presiona el uno en tu teléfono y los $1,000 ya son tuyos.
So.
And.
Presiona el uno en tu teléfono y los $1,000 ya son tuyos.
I heard telephone.
Yeah, and I heard – press number one or something. I don't know. But that just came through on our Skype line. It kind of reminds me of Lost in the first season when they kept hearing, you know, iteration 18773.
Presiona el uno en tu teléfono y los $1,000 ya son tuyos.
Wow. So it was just kind of creepy.
Okay. It was just some stupid message of some sort.
What were you saying? Yeah, but why do they call our Skype line and leave that number?
Well, they call the house and leave that.
I don't know. Weren't you saying something odd about Lost? What was it?
Just quoting Ronnie.
Oh, what?
Ronnie had a great line.
The great
today.
Ron Bennington.
Yeah, the man of radio, Ron Bennington. said that he thought when Lost was over, it was just going to be a retarded kid looking into a snow globe. He imagined it all. I just about wrecked my car. It was hilarious.
I would love that. If they ended it that way, it would be brilliant.
Oh, absolutely.
I would totally go for that.
Mm-hmm.
All right. We got this other voicemail, and we got a bunch of weird ones this time.
I don't have a medical question to ask you. However, I think it'd be nice if you put a registered nurse on your team.
And who would you like that to be?
I have a polio, 55 years of nursing. I think that might be a nice addition. Old nurses like me are rare.
Old, huh? Well, that means you'll be passing away soon.
Yeah,
and,
Jesus, without ever having been on this show.
Iron lungs and rocking beds and, Kennedy's hot.
You know why we don't use iron lungs anymore? Because they suck.
Because they suck.
Packs and all those things are just antiquated. But please don't forget those old gals.
Okay.
John,
we won't.
I think this chick wants your spot, John.
Yeah, really, it really does sound to me like she is looking for a spot on the show.
Yeah, she wants a job, dude. That's totally, you know, I think you should have an old-time nurse, and we're real rare.
Is she listening to this show? Come on. Is that who's listening to us?
Maybe it is.
I hope she is.
A single new drug after 1970?
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
I know. I think that's funny, but anyway. Yeah.
MRSA, all we use is penicillin.
Well, you had sulfa drugs.
Leave her alone. She sounded like a nice old lady.
Oh, she's a nice old lady that sawed people's legs off in the Civil War.
Poor little thing.
Dun, 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 dun.
The name of the specialist...
Oh, wait, sorry, I started this one a little bit.
What?
Hi, I would just like to find out the name of the specialist I can go to if I'm having lower left leg swelling. There's no pain, but I'd just like to know the referral of... what specialist will I use? I'm not familiar with who I should go to. And I don't know where to listen to on the air, so if I can get an email, great.
So she's not going to listen to the
show. She's not going to listen to the show.
Does she listen to this show?
I don't know, bro.
She said she's not going to listen to the show. Can we email her back? And then doesn't give us her email address.
No email address?
No.
Whatever. So what's the worst thing it could be?
Well, left leg swelling, we'll go ahead and answer the question on the odd chance that somehow she's listening.
Yeah, well, I just want to know what something bad might happen.
Or maybe somebody else told her, hey, you could just call this guy. Maybe somebody else is listening.
We need so much more information, but one leg swelling can be a sign of something serious.
Uh-huh.
And we'll go through those. There's also something really cool that it could be that's totally not serious at all. So let's talk about the serious things. We think about blood clots because if you get a blood clot, it's always in the vein.
Mm-hmm.
And remember, we talked about this multiple times, that the arterial side is high pressure. So you pump the blood into the leg, but the vein side is low pressure. The blood can't get back out again because of the blood clot. So you get a big puffy leg.
Mm-hmm.
That's one thing. Another thing might be a blockage of the lymphatic drainage because there's this other system that draws clear fluid out of the extremities and other places, and that's the lymphatic system. And if you have a blockage in your pelvis so that, you can pump fluid in but it can't get back out, you'll get a big puffy leg. Sometimes you would have one of the things that could cause it to be a mass in the pelvis. So a lot of times we'll do a pelvic ultrasound on someone that has something like this, or a CAT scan or an MRI, looking for something like that if they don't have blood clot.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the last thing is a really cool thing that can cause this that's totally benign is a thing called left leg edema of the elderly. And what this is, and it's kind of a little bit hard to explain on the air, but the artery to the right leg lies over the vein to the left leg.
Okay.
Okay?
Mm-hmm.
So, and it compresses it. And again, if the vein is compressed, you can pump blood in, but you can't get it back out at the same rate, so you get a big puffy leg. And that's a completely benign thing, and it's totally due to the way that our Creator created us. You know, it's just anatomy. And it seems to be more often seen in people after the age of 65. I don't know how old she is, but that, it could be that. But that's a diagnosis. You don't want to make that diagnosis till you've ruled out the other stuff.
What's it called?
Unilateral leg edema of the elderly.
Unilateral leg edema of the elderly.
Yeah.
I have never heard of that.
Well, so you learn. See,
what do you do for it?
Nothing. You don't have to. Now, if it's the swelling is bothering you, you can wear a compression stocking on that leg.
Okay. But you can't. There's no way to manipulate that vein and get it out of there.
No, that would be so
too
invasive.
Risky. Way
to be
risky.
Way too risky just for that.
Right.
So, okay. So anyway, so there you go.
Wow.
That's pretty cool.
Yeah.
All right. I don't know if we had any. Okay, we did her. Okay. Well, let's go to the next question, John.
Next question.
It's kind of a long one, but it's an interesting one.
Dear Dr. Steve, I have a buddy of mine who has been drinking ionized water to level off his body's pH balance, and he swears it's been a miracle worker. He'd been taking Nexium for acid reflux for almost 15 years and had to sleep sitting up because he had it so bad. But he says that since he's been drinking the ionized waters, he's completely off the Nexium and hasn't had a hint of heartburn or discomfort. His mother-in-law is an old hippie and really into homeopathic medicine, and she's the one that got him to try the stuff. Is there a certain pH level we should keep our bodies at? Does ionized water help, or is it all bullshit?
Okay, it's all bullshit.
Yeah, placebo alert.
I hate to say it, and I'm sure we'll be pissing some people off out there that sell ionized water contraptions, but I can't argue with success. Something made him feel better, but I've got a real open mind. Mm-hmm. True scientists want their beliefs to be challenged all the time. And I feel that I was a scientist before I went to medical school. I really feel like I have that scientific mindset. Now, people think that scientists are close-minded and don't, they don't want things to challenge their views. It's really not true. Scientists love nothing more than something that completely radically challenges their views, mm-hmm. because then that means they're going to learn something new and important.
Yeah.
People were not thrilled with the idea of the Big Bang. This wasn't something that scientists accepted until every single test that you do to confirm it showed consistent with the Big Bang.
Mm-hmm.
And so I have an open mind. I'm not one of those guys that thinks that we know everything in medicine. Mm-hmm. But this is a load of fecal matter. Ionized water is a misnomer. What they're talking about is somehow alkalizing water by applying an electric current to it. And anyone who took chemistry in college knows that there's so many fallacies in this that it's not even funny. And what's bad is that so many people either didn't take chemistry or they forgot about it after they took it, or they can't critically examine nutty claims and scams that are out there. And this is just one of them. Most ionized water systems are sold through multi-level marketing companies, and they don't have to make any claims. The company doesn't have to make any claims because the people who are involved in the multi-level marketing make all the claims for them,
mm-hmm.
you know, to their friends and stuff. And, you know, they're always trying to recruit new salespeople in the fold so they can sell more stuff, and it keeps the Federal Trade Commission and the FDA out of their hair, out of the corporation's hair, because they're not the ones making the claims. You cannot ionize pure water. That's all there is to it. It can't be done. Pure water is an insulator, and you can have a little electrolysis because water molecule is a little more positive on one end than the other. You have to add some impurities to it, like an electrolyte, to get it to really hydrolyze. You know, when you put a positive and negative current in it. Pure water, however, can never be made alkaline through any kind of electrolysis. You lose hydrogen and oxygen, that's it. And what's left behind is water.
Right.
You know, the pH will never change. Now, anyone out there gets one of these things, and they cost about $1,000 for a battery and two wires, but they put it in a really fancy package, right?
Way better.
You get one, bring it to us, and we'll test it, and we'll show you that the pH is not changing in that mm-hmm. water. Now, if you just want to, ionized water is just a moronic term. It has no meaning chemically whatsoever. And the body controls its own pH. You know, right. The pH in the stomach is less than 4. The pH of the blood is 7.4. I mean, I can go on and on. We'll talk about this more next show because we are running out of time. But this one really gripes my Yes. And just because it's something I know about.
And right? they came up with it before you to sell it?
Yes.
And if people are paying a grand for this stupid shit.
Yep. Yeah. No, you're right. So anyway, now look, if you sell it out there or if you're advertising on 202 with ionized water, we're not talking about you. We're talking about all those other people. Don't miss our show in 2 weeks at 5 p.m. Eastern right here on the Sirius 197 XM 202. One of the hot topics of the day we'll be covering is bestiality, and we'll discuss the infamous pig effing movie, also called The Wedding Trough. You don't want to miss that. Thanks to Double Vasectomy Todd, Rob from Elizabethton, who is mysteriously quiet tonight. And to P.A. John, don't forget to visit drsteve.com or check our Twitter at Weird Medicine. All the best to Brooklyn Blowhard. Hope you get better, buddy. And thanks always to Opie and Anthony, Ron and Fez, without whom the show would not exist. For P.A. John and me, check your stupid nuts for lumps, quit smoking, get off your asses, and get some exercise. We'll see you in another 14 days for the next edition of Weird Medicine. Because comfortably numb.